Thank you. Good morning. I will ask the marshal to call us in, please.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Bratvold, Judge Bryan, Judge Halbrooks, the Honorable Diane B. Bratvold presiding.
Good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I will ask the marshal to call the first case. I see the lawyers are here and present. Before I do that, let me just make sure that your connection is solid. I know that it's been checked once before, but it's probably a good idea to do so. So, Mr. Isaacson, are you able to hear me?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Very good. And Mr. Crow?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Excellent. And we can hear you. So that's good. So Marshall, if you would call the first case on our calendar, we have a total of five on our calendar today. Three of those are oral. Well, we have the lawyers here present for the first matter. And so the marshal can proceed.
The first case is in the matter of the civil commitment of Joshua Irvin Thomas Stabler, case A201473.
And it's our thanks to the attorneys here being present for your briefing in the matter, and we look forward to argument today. I want to make just a couple of quick remarks that you might be familiar with, but I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. So, of course, our arguments are proceeding by Zoom this morning, but our procedures haven't changed at all. We're just having the argument by remote connection. And so if you would have any questions about that, you know, let us know, but our procedures remain the same. So the couple of reminders I want you to pay attention to are that before you begin your remarks, that you identify yourself as well as the client you represent. So we do record our arguments and we find those valuable later on, as well as they are posted on the Court of Appeals website. And then the second thing I'd remind you to do is to keep your eye on the clock. That should be visible to you now on your screen. Let me know if it isn't. It's visible to us. And of course, it tends to go quickly. We do enjoy the conversations and find them very helpful. So with that, counsel for appellant, we are ready for you to begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Tucker Isaacson, and I represent the appellant Joshua Stabler in this case. This is an appeal of an order committing him as mentally ill and dangerous to the public. The lower court committed error on two of the main issues in this case. There are more than that, but there are two main ones. And that is that at all times relevant to this commitment, there was a less restrictive alternative available. And also that at the time of the review hearing, Mr. Stabler did not meet the criteria for mentally ill and dangerous to the public anymore. He, under Minnesota statute 253B.18, he did meet the criteria for commitment as developmentally disabled under Minnesota statute 253B.09 and should have been committed as developmentally disabled. Mr. Stabler has a long history of behavioral issues and various diagnoses. Most recently, on November 7th, 2019, he was admitted to MLB Broberg Lake, which is a group home designed specifically for developmentally disabled people with behavioral issues. Things were improving for him at that time, but then on May 26th, 2020, he had some injurious or some self-injuring behavior, which put him in the hospital. And as a result of this hospitalization, the county for the first time decided to try to commit Mr. Stabler. So the initial commitment hearing was on June 30th, 2020, and Dr. Tinius prepared a report for this hearing.
So Mr. Isaacson, I just want to clarify something because you said it very quickly and I was a bit confused in some of the things I read. Of course, you're right. Mr. Stabler does have a long history. And so there's a lot of information in front of the court. So this is the first time a civil commitment petition has been filed, or it's the first time a petition has been filed under the MIND designation?
Your Honor, this is the first time that a commitment order has been filed of any kind for Mr. Stabler.
Okay, thank you. You go right ahead.
Thank you. At that initial commitment hearing, Mr. Stabler agreed to the commitment. As Dr. Tinius did recommend commitment as mentally ill and dangerous, but his plan was for Mr. Stabler to stay at MLB Broberg and then to work with Lutheran Social Services to get him a more personalized placement, which is the ultimate goal of Mr. Stabler, is to live in a place that's more his own. And so,
Mr. Isaacson, question about that. You do make the point in your brief a couple of times, I think, that he agreed voluntarily at the time of the initial hearing. Of what legal significance is that, if any?
At the initial hearing, he agreed to the commitment because the doctor was recommending it. And the doctor's recommendation was that he stay where he was and go with the plan that Lutheran Social Services had for him, which is what Mr. Stabler wanted. He wanted the process to speed up because he wants that. He has that dream of getting his own place or his own things. And so at the initial hearing, that's what he thought was going to happen. And that's what, that's what they thought was going to happen.
Although the district court's order following that first hearing did commit him to the secure treatment facility, correct?
That is correct. It did. And that is one of the errors in this case.
But he did not move at that time because a bed was not available. Is that why?
The county on the record said that there wasn't a bed available at that time, but the Department of Human Services needed to look for a bed or find him one, which was misleading in that instance because the term Minnesota Security Hospital or where he was going to go, where he is now, was never discussed. Saying that they're going to find him a bed is misleading in the fact that the only secure facility in Minnesota is the Minnesota Security Hospital. So there's no need to find him a bed. It's just waiting or just sending him there. So he thought that meant that they're looking for a place like Lutheran Social Services meant for a more personalized placement, not that he was going to be going to the security hospital.
Okay. I guess my basic point is just reading the district court order, that is not what the district court said. However, Mr. Stabler arrived at that understanding.
And that was based on the testimony at the hearing, not the court order. So the court order says something that wasn't discussed at the hearing. It was never discussed where he was going to be sent, but it was understood that they were going to follow the doctor's recommendation.
Okay, thank you. I don't want to take up more of your time on this issue.
Well, I'd actually like to follow up because Judge Hallbrooks mentioned at the beginning, what was the significance of the entry of the initial order? Pursuant to stipulation, because I've read the transcript at the initial hearing and I'm familiar with the portion that you're referring to. And it did start with the attorney for Mr. Stabler indicating that they had reached an agreement that the initial commitment order could be entered. And then as you indicated, so the order that was issued does commit, as is typical in these situations, does commit Mr. Stabler to the Minnesota Security Hospital. And I don't see any objection after that in the record, not either by paper, you know, so there could have been a written objection of some sort filed with the court. And I don't see it at the beginning of the review hearing, which is if that was the error that the judge made, that the judge somehow took a misstep and did something that the parties hadn't agreed to, it seems to me someone had to stand up and object to that, or we're really dealing with review of the totality of the proceedings, the initial order and the review hearing, and I'm struggling. So help me out on that, Mr. Isaacson.
That the main problem in this case stems from the review hearing and the fact that even if Mr. Stabler got committed to the Minnesota Security Hospital, or that's what happened, the court should have found that there was a less restrictive alternative available because there always was, even at that initial hearing and at the second hearing, there was a less restrictive alternative for him. And so that's the main issue in this case. And he agreed to be committed as mentally ill and dangerous, but that doesn't mean that you have to be sent to the security hospital.
Right. And I understand that. It's very clear in the statute. So I'm happy to have you turn to that part of the argument. I just want to make sure we don't overlook anything with regard, because you do list the stipulation as your first issue in the appeal. And so it sounds like you're ready to move on to the least restrictive alternative.
Yeah. Thank you, Your Honor. For the least restrictive alternative, there are two standards. The first is at the first hearing, the patient or others need to prove that a separate facility is available and willing to take the patient. And then at a review hearing, In re Verhelst, this court wrote that the proponent of indeterminate commitment must establish by clear and convincing evidence that the statutory requirements of commitment continue to be met, and that no less restrictive alternative is available. So at all times in this case, in either standard that you use, there was only evidence in the record that MLB Broberg Lake could continue to care for Mr. Stabler. Dr. Blunt, in his report, interviewed three other people who work with Mr. Stabler at MLB Broberg, Dr. Miller, Rose Holt, and Steve Dahl. And each of these people said that MLB Broberg can continue to take care of Josh or Mr. Stabler. And Dr. Blunt also cited Dr. Tinius's report, which said that MLB Broberg is the best place for Mr. Stabler, and that there was a plan there in place to get him moved to a more specialized placement. And so at all times there was, MLB Broberg never said that Mr. Stabler couldn't stay there. They always said that he could stay there and that he should stay there. The only evidence. Well,
let me follow up with just a couple of record questions on that. So MLB Broberg is a temporary facility. That's reflected several times in the record. And you don't disagree with that, right?
It is not a permanent placement, no.
Right. So I don't know exactly the parameters. I don't see that in the record. Is there, I don't know if there's a limit on the number of months, but as you already indicated, Mr. Stabler can't stay there, you know, ongoing. There has to be a plan in place to transfer him, right?
Yes.
Right. So, and I understand they were working with LSS to develop such a plan as an alternative, depending on the outcome of these commitment proceedings.
Yes. Right?
Okay.
That is correct.
And the district court did have evidence in front of it that indicated, in fact, there are very specific findings at the review hearing that the placement at MLB Broberg was not successful, both as to the instances that you mentioned. The first one, Mr. Stabler has harmed himself, you know, while at MLB Broberg. And secondly, that he's assaulted a staff member. And that led the district court to conclude, and there's other evidence as well from the social worker, from the legal guardian, indicating that it's time to make a change and greater security is required to deal with the public safety elements. I appreciate that you also criticize placement at the Minnesota Security Hospital based on appropriateness of treatment, but there is that dual concern for public safety and self-safety. That Mr. Broberg or that Mr. Stabler is safe as well.
Thank you.
Would you address those concerns? I see them all reflected in the order, and obviously we're very deferential to the district court's analysis if there's evidence in the record. So would you please address that?
The one incident that occurred between the initial hearing and the review hearing was an altercation with a staff member, which other MLB Broberg staff said that nothing resulted from, and it was more of a misunderstanding, and that he was able to be redirected. They had plans to increase the staff ratio for Mr. Stabler, and all the people who work there said that he can stay there. As far as the social worker who testified at Mr. Stabler's hearing, that was Mr. Adamek. And Mr. Adamek said that committing somebody with a developmental disability to the Minnesota Security Hospital is a last resort, as it's not really meant for people with developmental disabilities, but also that I lost my train of thought. Mr. Adamek never says that Mr. Stabler can't stay at MLB Broberg. His fear is that if he were to lose his placement at MLB Broberg, it would be hard to find him a new spot. So Mr. Stabler never couldn't stay.
Right, and a pause for a minute on Mr. Adamek's testimony. So he has worked with Mr. Stabler for a number of years and struggled to find placements for him at time. So again, remembering that MLB Broberg is temporary, it seems to me that the district court was not acting outside its discretion in listening to the testimony and crediting the testimony of Mr. Adamek. And so, you know, tell me if I'm missing something there.
Just that Mr. Stabler, there is no set time limit that he can stay at MLB Broberg, and a plan was in place and was being made to get him moved. And so he hadn't used up his time, and nobody from MLB Broberg testified or said that it was time for him to move on. They said that, no, give us more time. We have a plan. we can take care of him. We can handle his needs, and he's better off here. That's also what the court examiner said, is that you shouldn't send him away because it would make things worse. They said that MLB Broberg can handle him physically and with public safety in mind, that they're doing enough, but that if you send him away, he's going to get worse. Both examiners, only one testified at the review hearing, but both examiners said that if you send him to the Minnesota Security Hospital, because most of his problems stem from his developmental disability, he likely won't succeed in the treatment and therefore won't get out. And he has a right to treatment. And if he's not getting it, or if it's not helping, then he's not in the proper placement. Because everybody said that, or all the people in the record said that MLB Broberg is a good placement for now for him, I think it was premature to move him to the Minnesota Security Hospital. If he were to lose that placement, then it would have been possibly time to consider other options. But he never did, and there's only evidence that says that the Minnesota Security Hospital is not the place for him. As a developmentally disabled person, you can't just treat that the way that they're treating other mentally ill people.
Mr. Isaacson, I know your time is running down. I want to throw in this question and make sure I understand. It seems that there's two different arguments potentially that you might be making, maybe both or one or the other. Are you saying that the court was required to list specifically the alternatives and then address each one and say why this was not appropriate and they didn't follow that process and that's why it was error? Or are you saying that the evidence here just doesn't support the ultimate decision here?
More so that the evidence just doesn't support sending Mr. Stabler to the Minnesota Security Hospital. The evidence I submit supports him staying where he was accepted and where the doctors said he should stay. Because if he goes, and as he's gone, to the Minnesota Security Hospital, he will likely get worse and not get out. And that is, you know, the worst possible scenario for him. I see my time's running out. May I conclude?
You can complete your answer. Go ahead.
That was the end of my answer. I was going to conclude.
You know, we do have 5 minutes for rebuttal, Mr. Sure. Isaacson. If there was a final additional point that you'd like to make right now, we're happy to let you do that for a moment. But you've got the 5 minutes. So.
This the other part of this case, and I won't get into it right now, I can on rebuttal, is just that Mr. Stabler was committed as mentally ill and dangerous, but at the review hearing, the evidence showed that he was developmentally disabled, and so he didn't fit this statute's definition of mentally ill and dangerous anymore. And so that's the other error that was committed, and either one would get him back to a proper placement. Thank you.
Thank you. So, counsel for respondent, we're ready for you to begin.
Thank you. My name is Nathan Crow. I'm an assistant Stearns County attorney appearing on behalf of Stearns County Human Services. May it please the court, Judge Brotvold, Judge Bryan, and Judge Holbrooks, Mr. Isaacson. The issue before the court on this appeal is ultimately whether there is sufficient evidence to indeterminately commit Mr. Stabler to the as mentally ill and dangerous. As the court is aware, under the case law in Knops, the decision must be reviewed in the light most favorable to the court's decision and only set aside if that decision is clearly erroneous. The court's decision must be based on evidence at the hearing. The arguments laid out by Mr. Isaacson in this matter, in his brief and in his argument before the court today, is essentially that the 60-day examiner, Dr. Blunt, did not recommend the indeterminate commitment for Mr. Stabler. So as a result, it is not appropriate for the indeterminate commitment to have been ordered. As was held in the Malm decision, at the 60-day review hearing, it is appropriate for the trial court to consider all of the evidence, even evidence admitted earlier at the initial commitment hearing, as is contained in the records that were submitted into evidence at the trial court and then submitted to the Court of Appeals as part of this decision. Mr. Stabler has a long history of mental health diagnoses, and it is clear in those diagnoses that there have been a wide range of opinions as to what exactly is happening and what is Mr. Stabler's correct diagnosis. At the initial commitment hearing, Dr. Tinius, the primary mental health diagnosis that he diagnosed Mr. Stabler with was delusional disorder. At the review hearing, Dr. Blunt only diagnosed Mr. Stabler with intellectual disability, mild, and rule out post-traumatic stress disorder. However, in his report and in his testimony, Dr. Blunt discussed the complexity of Mr. Stabler's presentation and the difficulty in determining exactly what is Mr. Stabler's diagnosis. It is difficult to tell exactly what is happening with Mr. Stabler. The Rule 20 evaluations that were received into evidence and other mental health evaluations, there have been differing opinions as to whether Mr. Stabler is truly having delusions or if his delusions are a result of his developmental disorder. So I think that is the fundamental disagreement that is laid out in the evidence that the lower court had before it. Ultimately though—
So counsel, you're focusing at this point on the district court's decision to commit Mr. Stabler as mentally ill. Is that right?
Well, I'm focusing—
That particular prong?
On the prong at the review hearing of mentally ill and dangerous.
Right, and I think we all appreciate, because it's clear in the briefing, that Mr. Stabler is not challenging the dangerousness determination. Yes. So I guess what I'm wondering is if you would move forward, because you've outlined how Dr. Tinius and Dr. Blunt disagree as to mental illness. That's clear, and there is, you know, the evidence, at least your comments are clear to me. The least restrictive alternative, though, is very interesting, that argument, because, of course, the burden of proof is on the patient initially, at least according to statute. The Dr. Blunt and Dr. Tinius actually agree on that, don't they? They agree that MLB Broberg is the most appropriate placement for Mr. Stabler. I need you to comment on the district court's analysis of that, because I read that test as not only placing the burden of proof on Mr. Stabler, the patient, but also saying that it needs to address the least restrictive alternative, needs to address treatment needs and the requirements of public safety. So it's both, right? And it seems to me we have two highly qualified evaluators saying that Mr. Stabler's treatment needs will not be met. I mean, affirmatively saying not met at Minnesota Security Hospital. So has Mr. Stabler met his burden of proof by clear and convincing evidence when you have that uniform opinion?
The question of the least restrictive alternative is obviously, as everyone here is aware, is a difficult question in this case, because the two interests to be considered are the treatment needs of Mr. Stabler and public safety. And so while both examiners recommend that Mr. Stabler remain at MLB Broberg Lake, I think the facts before the court, including the very long history of Mr. Stabler's difficulties in placement throughout the years, his violent behavior, but then more specifically, his violent behavior at MLB Broberg Lake. I think it is reasonable for the court to consider the needs for public safety. And I think it's telling that, you know, even in the 60-day period between the initial commitment hearing and the full commitment hearing, there was additional violent behavior by Mr. Stabler at that placement. And that's noted in the order prepared by Judge Cashman. So I think it's reasonable for the lower court to look at the facts and and weigh the needs for public safety and for Mr. Stabler's treatment, and to say that while these examiners are focusing, I think, and reasonably so, on Mr. Stabler's needs, that they are concerned for how well he will do at the security hospital, I don't think that either of those opinions really fully address the public safety needs. I think the fact that there was a violent assault on a group home staff member, both in August and in May, and that's just at MLB Broberg Lake, that there are these, in 2020, there's these violent acts. I think it's reasonable to say that even though the examiners and people at MLB Broberg Lake say that that facility meets his needs, I think it's reasonable based on the facts and additional evidence to say that it doesn't meet the public safety needs.
So I guess what I'm trying to understand is how the analysis of the least restrictive alternative informs our review. So you answered one part of that. You've indicated that Broberg is not appropriate, or at least the district court didn't abuse its discretion. It had evidence in the record to determine that MLB was not the most appropriate placement because of public safety concerns. I can see where you've said that. Now, please address, you know, the opposite, which is where Mr. Stabler is placed as a result of the district court's order. So the security hospital, it seems that both experts agree that his treatment needs are not met. It's not just that the balance is somewhat out of whack, but that actually his treatment needs are not met at Minnesota Security Hospital. So does the district court say, and it doesn't address that, at least I don't see any comment from the district court about that. So does the district court's order fail in that regard?
I would argue that the district court's order does not fail in that regard. Looking at all of the evidence before it, yeah, I think that I don't think the district court's order fails to address the balance between those two needs. I don't think it needs to specifically address the
Mr. Crow, it sounds like it's two parts. It's not just what you're talking about in terms of the record. It also seems to me a legal question that Judge Bradfold's asking. What is required for the district court? Do they look at the placement that is in the order, or are they looking at the alternatives when they're making this decision? And whichever they focus on, I think the question, the legal part of this question is kind of, what do you do when those two, the treatment needs and public safety, when those might be at odds? So if you only have to focus on the alternative, are you saying the district court doesn't even need to consider whether the treatment needs would be met at the security hospital? Because that's not the language of the statute is focusing on the alternative. Or are you saying that essentially public safety outweighs the treatment needs? Or are you saying that the district court just has to describe or address its balancing of these two competing interests? Whichever way you go, I think it starts with, for me at least, some legal framework. And I'm not clear as to what that legal framework should be. And perhaps you can address that and then move to the facts.
Thank you. In the matter of Ayers, or I might be saying that incorrectly, Ayers, it addresses how there's no requirement in the mentally ill and dangerous statute that the court make specific findings of listing the less restrictive alternatives considered and reasons for their rejection. So that's not required. I know that does not get all the way to the heart of
Let me put it this way. Is there anything that requires a district court when they decide to indefinitely place somebody at the security hospital? Do they have to consider whether treatment needs are met at that placement? Do they have to consider whether public safety concerns are addressed at that placement? Or are you only looking at treatment needs and public safety when deciding whether something is a less restrictive, viable alternative?
I think under 253B.18, it certainly does require that. So when the analysis is, unless the patient or others is, so in the statute 253B.18 subdivision 1 parens A, the standard is showing there's a less restrictive alternatives, an alternative that is consistent with the patient's treatment needs and the requirements of public safety. So, I mean, per that statute, it would appear that it is appropriate to consider both both of those factors in making that less restrictive alternative decision. But then I think, and I don't know that the court needs to specifically address those in its findings in their decision. But no, I certainly am not, I certainly can't argue that that is not one of the less restrictive, or that is not part of the less restrictive language.
So Mr. Crow, I'm losing, I can still hear you, but your sound is getting very quiet at times. I think it might have to do with your microphone placement, just to let you know.
Sorry, thank you.
So let me see if I am following this line of your answer on this question. I think it is important. You referred back to the statute. And I think it is quite clear that under the least restrictive alternative analysis that the district court is going to consider both treatment needs and public safety. I'm not quite sure I followed your answer to Judge Brian's question. In doing that, does the court consider not only the proposed, you know, alternative placement, so the treatment program or treatment facility, as well as the secure treatment facility, which we all know means Minnesota Security Hospital? So would you answer that?
Yes, and I just want to make sure I'm understanding the question. Is the district court required to make findings about?
No, it's not about the findings. It's to show that there's a consideration. I appreciate the detail in the Ayers case. You know that the district court is gets some deference in terms of if it shows its consideration of the statutory requirement. But what's the legal framework? So in determining and considering a less restrictive alternative, you know, that language supposes there's a comparison, right? Less restrictive. So that there would be, the comparison would be the security hospital to a treatment program. Here it's St. Peter versus MLB. So does the district court test both of those alternatives? It doesn't have to be specific findings in the final order, but should we see, you know, evidence that the district court has considered treatment needs and public safety at both locations?
Yes, I think that if I may answer, yes, I think the court does need to consider the treatment needs and the public safety needs in making that decision and look at the options presented, which, as the court, as you laid out, are essentially MLB, Broberg Lake, or the Minnesota Security Hospital. I think, but I would argue that the lower court did look at those needs, but, and so that would be my position. Thank you.
Can I ask a follow-up, Judge
Bethel? Yes, please.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Crow, so the district court's factual finding number 17 in its second order of indeterminate commitment, I mean, it's very much a conclusory statement. It just says there is no less restrictive treatment or program available that is consistent with respondents' treatment needs and the requirements of public safety other than the forensic mental health program. Beyond that one statement, which seems very conclusory to me, I mean, what evidence is there to demonstrate to the panel that there was consideration of this and a balancing?
I think the district court's order primarily is focusing on the inability, in the court's opinion, to meet the public safety needs and the needs safety needs of Mr. Stabler at MLB Broberg Lake. It certainly does, and I think the factual findings support that, but I don't disagree with Your Honor. There aren't really any other additional findings that address the specific question of treatment appropriateness.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions for the panel? I'm happy to give Mr. Isaac some additional time as needed.
No. I know we're past time, but if I could just ask this one question, and I just want to know what your position is, Mr. Crow. Let's say that you're supposed to look at these two factors and you're making a comparison between the security hospital and some less restrictive alternative. What happens if no place can satisfy the treatment needs? And there's no possibility of clear and convincing evidence to show that either place can do so. What are we left with? No commitment? Or are we is there some rule in the statute or the case law that sets as a default placement?
Your Honor, in my opinion, the statute, the default placement is the Minnesota Security Hospital. And that would be looking at public safety needs primarily first, but I don't, I guess that would be my reading of the statute.
Is there anything further?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Crow. And Mr. Isaacson, we'll be ready for your rebuttal comments. I will ask the marshal to add 2 minutes to your time just to make sure that you can cover. That doesn't mean you have to use it all. It's totally up to you. I just want to make sure that you feel that you have adequate time to address the issues. So you can begin.
Thank you, Your Honor. I first want to address that as far as balancing treatment needs versus public safety, MLB Broberg is not just a you can come and go as you please. Rose Holt, the behavior analyst with Broberg Lake, she told Dr. Blunt that he can't go come and go as he pleases, and he's never allowed out of the facility without supervision. They have staff with them at all times. So it's not like he could just go wherever he wants. And he also understands that a developmentally disabled person in a commitment as developmentally disabled can be for an indeterminate amount of time. Both examiners think that he's going to permanently need care and staff members and help. And he's not opposed to that. He just wants it in the most integrated setting, which is his legal right. If the security hospital can't give him proper treatment, then I would submit that that the public safety argument is irrelevant at that point, because constitutionally and like by the rules, he has a right to be treated. A commitment isn't like jail. He's not going to prison. He's not being confined because he, killed someone. He's there to get better. And if he can't get better where he is, then the state and the county can't send them there, because then they're not following the whole point of the statute.
So Mr. Isaacson, you said a lot there. I want to make sure that we close the loop on one question that we began with Mr. Crow on. So, in the case where there, as Judge Bryan asked, so where there is no facility that perfectly meets both of these needs, so treatment needs as well as public safety, what is the default in Minnesota? So, again, assuming mentally ill and dangerous, right?
So assuming that they're mentally ill and dangerous and not developmentally disabled like this case, I would say the court should defer to whatever the doctors recommend, but also that, again, the commitment statute is its purpose is to treat mentally ill people. And if a facility cannot do that, if everybody says that it cannot do that, then they can't go to that place. Then it's just punitive. It's a penalty against them for being sick.
So is that, you've referred now to preventive detention, and that's your final issue, I think, in the case, and you rely on Olmstead as well as some other authorities for that. So is that what you're referring to when you say this treatment need has to be met at whatever placement is made based on Olmstead? Is that?
Yes, that developmentally disabled and mentally ill people have a right to be in the most integrated setting that's available. And in this case, that would be MLB Broberg, since there's no evidence that they can't have him. And the doctors say that they best meet his treatment needs. Also, any...
So, Mr. Isaacson, I just have to follow up quickly, because you're assuming that we completely discredit the testimony that the district court found credible. So the district court did find flaws with MLB Broberg. So, you know, in light of that, that's where this tension between treatment needs and public safety really becomes real in this case. So in light of that, you know, what alternative was the court presented with realistically under the statute? If based on the evidence, the district court determined that MLB Broberg was not meeting public safety needs. So then what is the correct analysis as you see it?
So they find, or they found that the evidence that the lower court used was acts done by Mr. Stabler, which the doctors knew of when they wrote their reports. But where should it, so just so I understand, the question is, where should he go if neither place is provides everything?
Right. We have the dual concerns, right? And if we credit the district court's analysis, MLB Broberg was not meeting public safety needs.
Mm-hmm. in cases like this, then I think that's, you know, where the appeal comes in. At some point, you need to balance the two sides. And in this case, the lower court found that some public safety needs were not being met, but the evidence says that there is no treatment possibility at MSH. So once that has zero, so there's zero treatment, and there is a couple incidents of, you know, incidents at, like, with staff members at MLB Broberg. And I think that's where the mistake is that to send someone somewhere where the doctors say he can't get better, he won't get out since it's in an indeterminate commitment. Both doctors said that it's going to make him worse and that he's not going to be able to complete the treatment. So at this point, Mr. Stabler is going to be there forever because it's not meant for him, which gets to my other point of Dr. Blunt testified that most of the problems for Mr. Stabler stem from his developmental disability. Developmentally disabled people under the statute can't be committed to the Minnesota Security Hospital because that's not its purpose. Its purpose is to treat mentally ill people.
Just to correct you briefly, though, that's if that is the sole cause, right? Developmental disability.
Yes.
Right. I mean, and it is complicated, isn't it, here for Mr. Stabler, because there is more than one issue, more than developmental disability. I think based on the totality of this record, the district court did not err in making that determination. Tell me if I'm wrong.
He has a very complicated history and he has many, many diagnoses, but the most recent one and the only one to testify and speak and have all of the information available was Dr. Blunt. There is no case where multiple doctors testified at a hearing and the judge didn't. So when there's multiple doctors, the judge weighs all the doctors' evidence or all the doctors' testimony and decides which one to believe. So if there's three that say you should be committed and one that says that they shouldn't, then the judge gets to decide what side to believe. But when only one doctor testifies, there's no case that I could find where there is only one and the judge doesn't follow their recommendation. And may I finish?
You may.
And at the time of the review hearing, the only doctor's opinion that was presented was Dr. Blunt's. And it was that he was only had a developmental disability. So he no longer met the definition, because the review hearing is to decide whether he continues to meet the definition of mentally ill and dangerous. Dr. Blunt said no. No other doctor said he did at that hearing, like other cases where there's multiple doctors. So he should have been committed as developmentally disabled. May I conclude?
Yes, you can briefly conclude.
Thank you. Mr. Stabler respectfully requests that the lower court's decisions be reversed and that he be allowed to go to a less restrictive placement, or on the alternative that his commitment be switched to developmentally disabled, as both would get him back to a place where he could be treated properly. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thanks to both lawyers in this matter. It's been very well briefed and well argued. We really appreciate your guidance. It's a difficult case. It's now submitted to us for our decision. We will issue a written decision within the statutory timeframe. So thank you.
Thank you.